I had my microphone on. I apologize. I've been doing this forever. I still get confused about that. So that was a very appropriate, thank you, George. That was a very appropriate song for us to be able to sing. We're going to talk about the cross. We're going to talk about Christianity. I think I've shared with you all before, back when Andreas was involved with gymnastics, there was a poster they had up in the gym that said if gymnastics was easy, it would be called football. It was a great little motivation thing, you know, to remind people that it can be difficult to be about whether it's gymnastics or, in our case, if we're going to be a Christian. You know, if we're going to be a Christian, we need to understand that the Christianity has not been tried and found to not work. It's been tried and found difficult. Christianity is not a cakewalk. It's a crosswalk. And sometimes we forget that part. So many times we want to claim that we are people of the resurrection power. We have the resurrection power. Can you feel the resurrection power within us? And we say, yes, I have that resurrection power. But we forget that in order for a resurrection to occur, there has to be a crucifixion. And a crucifixion is going to involve a cross. A crucifixion is going to involve suffering and pain and death. So many times we want to just skip over all that part. We want to be able to jump to the resurrection. But we don't get to do that. In our passage today, Jesus makes it quite clear to the disciples and to the crowd themselves. If anyone's going to follow me, they have to be willing. He's not going to make you do it. You have to be willing to pick up your cross and follow. To pick up your cross means to take a side. It means to take a stand. It means to take up our cross. And sometimes that can be played out in different ways. If you're familiar with the gospel, then you know that in the gospel of John, before Jesus picked up the cross, before he did that, the night before he did that, he picked up a towel. Do you remember that? He picked up a towel. And what did he do with that towel? He washed the disciples' feet. He washed the feet of those who were going to deny him. He washed the feet of those who were going to desert him. He washed the feet of those who were going to betray him. He washed the feet of those who were going to fail him in every possible way. He picked up a towel, washed their feet. And after he did that, he picked up a cross and died for their sins. And died for ours as well. Not because they were deserving. It wasn't like he ranked them and said, okay, well, you're kind of deserving. You, Judas, you don't have any. No. Everyone's feet were washed. Everyone's sins are forgiven. He died for all of us. He died for all of us, willing to pick up a cross. And if we're going to follow him, then we have the same opportunity. What makes us think that if we follow Jesus, that somehow we're excused from cross-carrying? We get that same opportunity. It's not all unicorns and rainbows following Jesus, all right? There's other things involved. The cross casts a wider vision than whatever is convenient for us, whatever is easy for us, whatever was comfortable for us. We have to be willing to go beyond that. We have a lot of people willing to sit at God's table, not too many people willing to work in God's field. Not too many. We look in our churches and too many times we see pew dusters. You know what they are, right? They come in every Sunday, they dust the pews with their butts, and then they leave. That's what they do. That's what they do. You know what we have sometimes in some, not in our church, of course, but in all the other churches. All right, in all the other churches, not here. All right, we have bib-wearing Christians. You ever notice that? Bib-wearing Christians are the ones who are saying, I need something that's going to feed me. feed me, feed me, feed me, feed me, feed me, as if they were babies needing to be spooned. Well, that sermon just didn't feed me. I'm sorry, I didn't think it was about you. I just don't feel fed in that worship service. I didn't, you know, and we forget that what you're supposed to be wearing is an apron. You're supposed to be serving. It isn't about you being fed. It's about you feeding others. The whole manna pack, the spaghetti dinner. It's not about you getting spaghetti. It's about supporting so that people who don't have any food can have a little. That's what we're all about. That's what we do. It's about picking up a cross, picking up a towel. Otherwise, if all you do is get fed all the time and you never do anything with it, you know what happens? You end up constipated. The church sometimes has constipated Christians. They're just feed me, feed me, feed me, feed me. They never do anything with it. There comes a time you have to pick up your cross. You have to get active. Years ago, there was a department store thought it would be good to market the baby Jesus. All right, they're going to market the baby Jesus, and there you could buy Jesus, you know, and there he's all soft and cuddly, unbreakable, and all this other stuff, washable even. You could just, you know, throw him in the washer, throw him in the dryer, all that, but it didn't catch on. All right, so they, after Christmas, they have all these little baby Jesuses left over, and so a manager marked them down, said, get Jesus now, 50% off. You ever notice how we want to do that with our own? I mean, we laugh at that, but think how many times we want it to be so easy. If it's easy, if it's convenient, then we're willing to follow. What part of cross are we not understanding? To pick up a cross and to follow Jesus means you're going to be led to places you don't want to go. You're going to be called to do things you don't want to do. You already know this. How many times have you felt the call of God to ask you to do something and you resisted? You've resisted it. God called you to do something and you said, oh, no, no, I don't want to do that. You're in good company. If you've ever read the Bible, then you're going to know everybody except for maybe Ezekiel, every single one of them resisted the call. Moses, no. Abraham, no. Nobody. Jonah got in a boat and went the wrong way. All right? He absolutely wanted nothing to do with the plan. He didn't want to do all of these things. I don't want to do that. I don't want to be like that. When the church was getting formed, all right? And here's Paul. And Paul thought he was doing God a favor. And Paul had to knock him down, slap him side of the head. You're not helping me out, Paul. You're not helping me out, Paul. My grace means for everyone. And everyone means everyone, Paul. All right? Are you understanding what everyone means? And Paul's going, but Lord, I'm only going after those, you know, those pagans, those heathens, those people who don't believe like us. Paul, those us's are us's, okay? We're all us's. There are no them's, Paul. I created all the people. They're all part of my kingdom. They're all my children. That's what we're about. And why? And Paul then spends the rest of his ministry sharing that message. And how well was that received? How was that working for you, Paul? Did it work out well? Not too much. Not too much. He got stoned. He got beaten. I don't mean stoned that way. I mean stoned. Lord knows you could understand if you had gotten stoned that way. Working for the church could drive you crazy. But, no. He got thrown in prison. He got beat. He had all kinds of problems thrown at him. So many times. It wasn't like people were saying, oh, now we see the light. No, they were saying, you don't. It's a hard thing if you're going to be a disciple. If you're going to truly be a follower, it means you have to be willing to do those things that you're not wanting to do. And that other people aren't going to understand why you are doing them. Why in the world would you even think about doing something like that? Because that's what God called me to do. That's what I'm being called to do. I've shared with you before, story after story of how that can work and how that can change in people's lives. In the summertime, in larger churches, the youth go out on mission trips. And this minister was coming back, and this youth had just come back from a mission trip. They had just gone back from, I think it was Hurricane Katrina. And they had been down there, and they were trying to help with all the rebuilding and the cleaning. And if you have you ever cleaned up from a flood? Do you know what that's like? Cleaning up from a flood is got to be one. I would rather be given a chainsaw and told to cut up trees than clean up. It is the smelliest, awfulest thing you could ever do. Mud caked on things, the drywall smell, it's terrible. It's nauseating. It's filthy. It's just disgusting. And this youth group had gone and done it, spent some of their summer vacation to go out there and clean up. And they come rolling out of the van looking like, you can imagine what they look like, okay? They didn't look that good going in, but coming out, they look terrible. Their clothes were all dirty. They look like they haven't slept, all right? They're raggedy, you know, they just kind of roll out of the van, fall in the parking lot, waiting for their parents to pick them up. And the minister went up to them and said, how you doing? Oh, we're tired. I've never been so tired. Every muscle aches. I've never been so dirty. I have never been so tired. And then one of them said, but you know, this is the best tired I have ever felt. The best tired I have ever felt. Knowing that you're making a difference. Knowing that you're able to do that. Not everybody's going to understand a call like that. One of the best stories, I'm going to tell you again, one of the best stories, Duke University, Will Willimon, all right, he's now a bishop, retired bishop now, but at that time he was working at Duke University in the religious department, he's a chaplain, he's the dean, he gets a phone call, 2:00 in the morning, he gets a phone call from a father who is extremely upset and using non-church language. You don't know what non-church language is, I'm sure, but your co-workers do. And so he starts calling up and he starts cussing Will out. I just want you to know, I am suing you. I'm suing your department. I am suing that university. I am suing you guys. I have lawyers. I have money. And I'm not afraid to spend it. I am suing you guys. And Will, of course, is concerned. And he says, well, what's the matter? I don't understand. Why are you suing? I'll tell you why. And he gives his name. And my daughter, and he gave her name. And Will said, oh, I know your daughter. Yeah, of course you know my daughter. That's why I am suing you. I don't understand. What in the world? Do you know how much money it costs to go to your school? Well, I know it's expensive. Yes, it's expensive. And she's been going there year after year after year after year after year. She went 4 years through your undergraduate program, 3 years through your engineering school. I have been bled dry by your university. Well, I'm sure she's getting a fine education. I don't understand why you're so out. Don't play dumb with me. I do not understand what is your... She's been listening to your stupid sermons. Okay. You want a refund? I don't understand. She has decided to quit. She's going to go to Haiti. She's going to help dig ditches because they don't have any fresh water in Haiti, and she thinks that she can help. Well, that sounds like a great thing. Why are you so upset? Because she just spent 7 years of my money. You are responsible. You are responsible. And Will began to take umbrage at that, and he says, wait a minute. How am I responsible for that? You know, she's going to dig that. Well, she went to our engineering school. I'm sure it's going to be a fine ditch. Don't get smart with me. But Will did. And Will said, hey, don't start blaming this on me. I'm not the one who took her to church. Who took her to church when she was growing up? Okay, I did. All right, and who took her to the youth group and all the mission trips? That was her mother's idea. But did you take her? Yes, I took her. Who's the one that introduced her to Jesus? Her mom and I. Don't be coming after me then. I'm not the one that introduced her to Jesus. You did. And then he said, but we just wanted her to be a good Presbyterian. And Will said, well, you messed up and made her a disciple instead. You made her a Christian. You made her a Christian. To follow the call of God means sometimes that we go against where everybody else is leading, where everybody else is going. It means we have to be willing to listen to God's voice and follow where God's voice leads, even if it's painful, and sometimes it comes at a high personal cost. Years and years ago at Princeton University, the visiting professor is there, and it's a social time, and they all sit down at the table, and he sits down, and the young woman is sitting next to him, and he begins a conversation. He notices she's back in the day Roman Catholic nuns wore a specific habit that they wore, and she's wearing the habit, and he asks her, "Are you a student here?" "Yes, I'm in the graduate program." "How's that working for you?" It's been exciting. It's been encouraging. I'm having a good time." But then she went on. She goes, "But, you know, I kind of came in late." And he said, "Well, what do you mean you came in late?" She goes, "Well, actually, I used to live in New York City. Actually, I was a buyer for Macy's. I was their highest grossing buyer at Macy's. I had a lovely apartment down in Manhattan, penthouse apartment. I was engaged. I was doing quite well for myself." And so the professor asked, well, "How is it that you're here at Princeton as a nun?" She goes, "Because I felt a call, and I couldn't believe that call at first, so I prayed about it, and I thought about it, and I prayed about it, and I thought about it. And I made a phone call, and I called my fiancé, and I had him come over, and I gave him back the ring, and said, 'I can't do it.' 2 months before the wedding. 2 months before the wedding. She said, 'I couldn't do it. God placed the call on my heart to serve the church and only the church.' So he took the ring, we cried, we said goodbye. She said, 2 months ago, I'm riding the subway. I'm in my habit. There's no place to sit. I'm standing up. Other people are standing up. And they're standing across from me, my ex-fiancé. And we recognized each other, and we hugged, and we cried, and we said goodbye. Again. And the professor said, 'Does it hurt still?' And she says, 'It has never quit hurting. It hurts every day. But if God calls you, what are you going to do?'" I want to be fair to you people. Just because you answer a call to God does not mean it's going to be easy. It does not mean it's going to be comfortable. It does not mean that it's all going to be sweetness and light. This woman still, 2 years later, every single day, feeling the pain of a life that could have been, was, that she willingly let go in order to follow a higher calling. It's a difficult thing to give yourself over completely to Jesus. And Jesus makes it very clear in this passage about what it means to follow me. If anyone, he says, if anyone, and that would be you, are going to follow me, you have to be willing to pick up your cross and follow. It's not a cakewalk, it's a crosswalk. It leads to a resurrection. But first you go through the crucifixion. There's suffering. There's pain. There's death to yourself and to your wishes and to your desires. An embracing of a wider vision that goes beyond how we happen to feel about it on a particular day or at a particular moment. To embrace the love and grace of God means to surrender. Amen. Amen.